Straight Talk from Israel.
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio. And now, here is Walter Bingham.
Hello and welcome to the program for January 12, 2018, which is also the 25th of Tevet 5778 in the Hebrew calendar. It was indeed an eventful week. I'll tell you about the visit of the Foreign Minister of Norway, a country that speaks from both corners of their mouth. In Norwegian, they call it hykleri. And you will hear part two of Israel, the Caring and Compassionate Society. There is also a report about yet more interesting finds at archaeological digs in Israel, one of which corroborates what the Bible tells us about Jerusalem, and another about life here 500,000 years ago. But I begin with Prime Minister Netanyahu, who this week attended a lunch in Jerusalem with NATO member state ambassadors to Israel. In his address, he disclosed that Israeli intelligence has thwarted several dozen mass terrorist attacks on European targets, some that involved civil aviation. We can only speculate whether that refers to hijacking aeroplanes and flying them into buildings. He also spelled out the threat from radical Islam and especially Iran's plans how to dominate the Middle East. After the break, you will hear his full speech after the usual pleasantries. Last week, I brought you a report of how the IDF, the Israel Defense Forces, integrates mentally and physically challenged volunteers into their services. It was a great example of Israel, the caring and compassionate society. It is a sad fact that the world views the judgment of what is moral or even ethical through the prism of political correctness. In times of economic depression, for them, the care of the less fortunate in society does not feature high on the list of priorities. The majority matters. But by contrast, in Israel, we even have a very strong voluntary sector in all fields, particularly in the sector of caring for the less fortunate in our society. Not only in the IDF, but of course also in the civilian sector, there is the same kind of care for the disabled in our society. One of the several organizations that have vocational rehabilitation centers is Shekel, nothing to do with money. It's a Hebrew abbreviation for Inclusion for People with Disabilities. I visited the Jerusalem Daycare Center of Shekel, and you'll hear my surprising report a little later in the program.
Always challenging the status quo. Hello, I'm Rod Bryant on Beyond the Matrix here at IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com. I want to encourage you to listen each week, every Wednesday at the same time, for an amazing show that will challenge you, inform you, and inspire news, views, and wisdom for the nations. Here on IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com. Don't forget, Beyond the Matrix every week, Wednesday, here on IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com.
Here is Walter Bingham.
The Prime Minister addressing the NATO country ambassadors to Israel.
There are two issues I want to spell out for you, which I think are important areas where Israel contributes to the security of every single NATO country. They both have to do with radical Islam. The world right now is threatened by radical Sunnis, led initially by Al-Qaeda, now by Daesh, by ISIS, and radical Shiites led by Iran. When we talk about ISIS, it's important to understand that Israel helps Europe in two fundamental ways. The first is that we have, through our intelligence services, have provided information that has stopped several dozen major terrorist attacks, many of them in European countries. Some of these could have been mass attacks of the worst kind that you have experienced on the soil of Europe, and even worse, because they involve civil aviation. Israel has prevented that, and thereby helped save many European lives. The second assistance that Israel has given to Europe and NATO has been the prevention of the establishment of what I call ISIS West in the Sinai. As ISIS is contracted, being destroyed in Iraq and Syria, it is trying to establish an alternative territorial base in the Sinai. Israel is contributing to preventing that in myriad ways. And in general, I would say that Israel is the most powerful indigenous force in the Middle East that fights radical Islam. Now to the second stream of radical Islam, that's Iran. Why is Iran so dangerous? Because it is, as Kissinger said, a cause, not a country. And the cause is worldwide domination under their brand of Islamic militancy. We are the small Satan, you're, no offense, the middle-sized Satan, America is the great Satan, but they have designs on all of us. Iran is dangerous because this radical ideology seeks to acquire nuclear weapons. The first task is to prevent them from acquiring nuclear weapons. The second reason they're so dangerous is because they're trying to establish an empire, a territorial empire, from Tehran to Tartus in the Mediterranean, enveloping the Middle East also from the south through Yemen, eventually conquering the Middle East. So this is what Iran is about. We are absolutely committed to preventing Iran from forming such a base, a military base, in Syria. And we back our words with action. And this is dangerous for you too, because the conquest of the Middle East by Iran would eventually affect all of your interests. Here's the third and specific interest that you should be concerned with. As part of Iran's plans of conquest and colonization of Syria, they want to bring in as many as 100,000 Shiites, Shiite fighters, imported into Iran. Not Iranians, under Iranian command. If you think you had a reaction to ISIS, that is to radical Islam, radical Sunni Islam, this is what really is happening in Syria, this is correct. So 500,000 were butchered, millions were uprooted from their homes, and millions went to Europe. They didn't go anywhere else, they just went to Europe. And that may be about to end, one hopes. But if Iran realizes its goal of bringing 100,000 Shiite fighters into Iran, this will reignite the same conflict, and you'll have the son of ISIS and the grandson of Al-Qaeda that will be fighting this new Shiite force. Where will the spillover happen? In Europe. Where will the human flow go? To Europe. Who's preventing that right now? Israel. Right now, Israel alone. But I maintain that this is a common interest that we have in NATO. So my message to you today is radical Islam, either Shiite or Sunni, threatens all of us. Israel is fighting both. Israel seeks your cooperation. You have a statement and a slogan in NATO, which I think is particularly apt. An attack on one is an attack on all. An attack by radical Islam, from whichever direction, on any of our democracies is an attack on all our democracies. This is not merely a statement of abstract principle. This is simple truth. So I submit to you that what we should do is increase our cooperation for our common interest, our common security, and for the quest for peace. We have a long-standing policy to prevent the transfer of game-changing weapons to Hezbollah from the Syrian territory. This policy has not changed. We back it up as necessary with action.
It is also significant that during the same week, the head of Israel's intelligence service, Mossad, Yossi Cohen, said, "We have eyes and ears and more, even inside Iran." The Prime Minister also addressed the annual New Year's cocktail reception for journalists held at the newly built Orient Hotel in Jerusalem, and he began with what could be considered a rebuke.
"We all gripe about the press. A free press is vital to our society, but a free, fair press is what we need. And you have to cover all the news, not all the news that fits a particular narrative. It's to cover all the news." I want to congratulate Ambassador Friedman, the American ambassador to Israel, who tweeted truth, unvarnished, straightforward, and I think he said some important things. The important thing is that Abbas's government is supporting the kind of murderers that murdered the father of six, Such people in our jails get $355 million a year, they and their families, from the Palestinian Authority. That is something that is untenable. I think a free press is vital to our societies. A free press must cover all things. Tonight, I want to highlight three stories that don't get the coverage they deserve. A father of six beautiful Israeli children was brutally murdered last night. President Abbas pays $355 million a year as a reward to murderers and their families. Funding and incentivizing murder doesn't exactly advance peace. Here's the principle. They're communicating to their people, kill an Israeli and get rich. What kind of message does that send to impressionable Palestinian children? So this is the first one. Second, here's a story in the past few months about the revolution that is occurring in Israel's Arab sector. My government is investing 15 billion shekels for Arab citizens of Israel to improve their health, their education, their welfare. That's more than any government in Israel has invested. So when the Middle East is falling apart, Israel is passionately pursuing the empowerment of all our citizens. And that's why we also have initiated a pilot program to teach grade 6 school children spoken Arabic so they can communicate with their neighbors. Because we care deeply about bringing people together. And we care deeply about increasing understanding and mutual respect. Raise your hand high if your network, newspaper, or site called Iran's leadership moderate in the last year. Call me old-fashioned, but I don't think there's anything particularly moderate about calling for the destruction of Israel. I don't think there's anything particularly moderate about jailing journalists and beating students in the streets. I don't think there's anything particularly modern in shooting demonstrators in the streets. So I urge you to cover the extremism and growing aggression of this dangerous Iranian regime. Covering these three stories will inform your readers and viewers of vital information. It will do a tremendous amount to advance their understanding of what is really happening in the Middle East, and it will also do a tremendous amount of good to advance peace. Because the only way that you can build peace is in a foundation of truth. You can't build peace that will crash against the rocks of Middle East reality. You have to see things as they are. You have to tell things like they are. So this is what we all must strive forward to advance truth and to promote peace. They're not mutually exclusive. One is dependent on the other.
He then answered a few questions.
The U.S. is taking steps to cut aid to the Palestinians. The Israeli parliament is looking at withholding tax revenues from the Palestinian Authority because of this issue of prisoner salaries. Are you worried that this could lead to the collapse of the Palestinian Authority? And if that happens, what would Israel do about it?
No, I don't think it will lead to the collapse of the Palestinian Authority, but I think they should redirect their funds to other things. Since you speak about funding, I want to make clear what our position is on UNRWA. My position is it's not a question of defunding UNRWA, it's a question of replacing UNRWA after 70 years with an agency that will actually address the real needs of real refugees. There are millions of refugees around the world. They're all taken care of by the UN High Commissioner of Refugees and some other UN establishments. But only the Palestinians have a specialized, a specific organization that is supposed to solve the refugee problem, in fact, perpetuates it. That's what UNRWA does. How long are we going to have UNRWA? Another 7 years? We already have great-great-grandchildren of refugees who are not refugees, but they're on the list of UNRWA. So I suggest something else. I suggest gradual conversion of all funds going to UNRWA to other agencies to deal with the question of refugees and actually have criteria. This will not have negative effects. It will have positive effects. Because the perpetuation of the dream of bringing the descendants of refugees back to Jaffa is what sustains this conflict. UNRWA is part of the problem, not part of the solution. It's time to bring another organization into being. The ones that exist, they can do the job.
Were you disappointed at the way India voted at the UN General Assembly on the question of Jerusalem? And India has recently cancelled a deal of $500 million with Israel. How is it going to impact relations between India and Israel?
Well, I would have preferred another vote, to be frank. I don't think it materially changes the tremendous flowering of relations between India and Israel. I think everybody can see that. President Modi's visit was very important milestone in that. My visit to India is the other one. And I think you're going to see an expansion of economic and other ties, regardless of this or that deal. Over time, I hope I'd see also a reflection of that more often in the voting of India in international forums. Doesn't nullify the fact that with India, with the other countries in Asia, with countries in Latin America and Africa, there is a tremendous increase of relations on all fronts. It just takes longer on the international front.
More from the Prime Minister after the break.
Hi everyone, this is Andrea Simintow from Jerusalem, inviting you to drop everything and join me on my show, Pull Up a Chair. We'll visit this week's quirky stories, meet fabulous guests, and discover my Israel. Together we'll laugh, shout, and explain the topics that make us say, hey, we've got to talk about that. So get comfortable and pull up a chair with me, Andrea Simintow, every Thursday on Israel News Talk Radio.
And now, here is Walter Bingham.
But you can see that President Modi's visit was a very important milestone in that. My visit to India is the other one. And I think you're going to see an expansion of economic and other ties, regardless of this or that deal. Over time, I hope I'd see also a reflection of that more often in the voting of India in international forums. Doesn't nullify the fact that with India, with other countries in Asia, with countries in Latin America and Africa, there is a tremendous increase of relations on all fronts. It just takes longer on the international front.
Trump has announced the ultimate deal, and now Pence is about to come to the region in less than 2 weeks. What would your ultimate deal look like?
Why don't you let Mr. Trump present his first, and then we'll see what the penultimate deal is and what the ultimate deal is. It takes time. I don't know if he'll present it, but we certainly haven't announced at any time that we'll walk away, because Mr. Trump said something that is so self-evident. He said that the seat of government of Israel is in Jerusalem. The Knesset, our parliament, is in Jerusalem. The judiciary, the Supreme Court, is in Jerusalem. You know that's not going to change. You know that Jerusalem is the capital of Israel under any deal, ultimate or not. Everybody understands, with a deal, without a deal, Jerusalem is Israel's capital, and therefore it makes sense also to move the American embassy there. That's good. I hope some foreign journalists were applauding now, because it's so obvious, it's so true. So I think that was very important. In any case, Mr. Abbas has used this statement to seek a way to essentially run away from the negotiations. He's done it before. His predecessor, Arafat, ran away from Camp David with President Clinton. Abbas ran away from such an arrangement as well. And he also ran away from a proposed discussion that President Obama suggested based on Mr. Kerry's deliberation. But he ran away from all of them. So he ran away again. Surprise. I think the last thing you should do as journalists is to give him credence. You want to negotiate peace? You've got to negotiate. We've never put any preconditions on negotiations, and I don't do so now. And of course, if President Trump puts forward his proposal, his ideas, I'll study them very carefully.
Now to other matters. Last week, I brought you a report of how the IDF, the Israel Defense Forces, integrates mentally and physically challenged volunteers into their services. It was a great example of Israel, the caring and compassionate society. It is a sad fact that the world views the judgment of what is moral or even ethical through the prism of political correctness. In times of economic depression, for them, the care of the less fortunate in society does not feature high on the list of priorities. The majority matters, but by contrast in Israel, we even have a very strong voluntary sector in all fields, particularly in the sector of caring for the less fortunate in our society. Not only in the IDF, but of course also in the civilian sector, there is the same kind of care for the disabled in our society. One of the several organizations that have vocational rehabilitation centers is Shekel, nothing to do with money. It's a Hebrew abbreviation for Inclusion for People with Disabilities. I visited the Jerusalem Daycare Center of Shekel, an NGO for integrating people with disabilities within Israeli society, where I was met by Sharon Zimmer, the resource development officer, who showed me around the center. The activities I saw in this modern multi-story building exceeded my expectations.
And starting at the top floor, I've arrived at the sewing shop. There are several young ladies, and some not so young, doing embroidery. Very beautiful. When you finish this, what will it be in the end? Where will you put it? On a pillow?
On a blanket.
On a blanket. Very nice. It's a ship with sails. Very beautiful. Thank you. There's another room where they are doing things. Also some embroidery.
Hi, Purim, yes?
Oh, yes. A piece of embroidery for Purim. Very beautiful. What's your name?
My name is Miri.
And you speak English too?
No?
Okay.
As you can see, Shekel serves everyone. And here you see men and women, Jews, Muslims, Christians, everyone together.
Well, there's some, what goes on the big table over there? You speak English? Yes. What do you do?
Is a clothes.
Oh, the challah covers. Very beautiful, very beautiful. What's your name?
Bracha.
Nice to meet you. Bracha.
Thank you.
They embroider challah covers.
They also make bags and they also make blankets.
What's your name?
They make a lot of toys.
What's your name?
My name is Walter.
And my name is Walter. Yes.
Here you can see they're knitting.
The finished product you sell in the shops?
Yes, absolutely. And we also get orders from abroad. We get orders from Israel. And
they get some money for their work?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. Well, I've walked into a room with several computers and there are people working.
This is our graphic studio. It's a studio that was designed to allow graphic artists with disabilities and without disabilities to work together and also to train people. This is our illustrator, Yafit. You can see some of...
Oh, hello. I see that you designed this, those coasters. Well, I must tell you that I bought a box of coasters some time ago in the shop. And you come here every day from your home?
I come twice a week.
And what do you do the rest of the time?
I work from home sometimes.
And you have the software and everything at home?
Yes.
When you work from home, who do you work for?
I work for this studio.
So what else do you design?
Most of many pictures I design, illustrating, that's it.
Nice to have met you. Your name?
Yafit.
Yafit, thank you. One of the projects they have is in conjunction with Bezalel, the leading art college in Israel, where they work together with people from Shekel. And the manageress or coordinator of this scheme is with me now. What's your name, madam?
My name is Abba Oz. And I have to say that we are not working only with Bezalel. We are working also with theater. We are trying to let the people who can't go to normal theaters to go to learn really everything about the theater. And this is together with Nissan Nativ, which is an academic place, and it is in Yafo. And they have a funeral in Jerusalem. And we are doing something with there in Jerusalem. And we are doing also the other things in Yafo.
So you actually have people who are acting?
Not only acting, learning all this around the acting. They are learning about costumes, about everything what's going on with the theater.
Thank you very much. That's another string to the bow of Shekel. The next place I've arrived at is a candle factory. I'm actually watching a man making candles. I've never seen it before, but it's very interesting. You can smell the hot wax. What's your name?
Brian.
What do you do? You've got some tool in your hand. What is it you're doing here?
Well, at the moment, I'm just cleaning a piece of wax so that it can be melted down properly without any junk or any garbage on the wax when it gets melted. You see, there's a lot of dirt right now, so I'm just cleaning it.
You make all kinds of candles, decorative candles in all kinds of colors. They remain in those glasses?
They remain in the molds until they're done, until they're completely cooled off. And then we take them out and we straighten them, which is my job. We straighten them for quality control to be cleaned and packaged.
Do you also make Havdalah candles?
Yes, we do.
Must be more difficult to put more wicks than one into the wax.
Well, we don't do the braided Havdalah candles. We do a different kind of Havdalah candle. For example, there was one that we used to make that had cloves in it so that it would give off a smell when you lit it.
Thank you very much. I don't want to intrude, but the whole group of people sitting here having a birthday party together with their supervisor. And they were singing as I came in. Let's move on. I've now walked into a very large area where there seem to be a lot of assembly work. Some people have to weigh parts. Others assemble what looks to me like electrical junction boxes, and there's a machine there that packages some of the parts which they are assembling for outside factories. What's your name?
Sakhi.
And you're in charge of this assembly work?
Of all the works in the factory. We have a multiply of works here, all kinds of.
I see you're very busy, I'll let you get on with it. I've now arrived at the cafe where I myself have already have often eaten, and some of the disabled are actually working here as table cleaners and even waiters. It's a place that I can recommend. It's Mahadrin Khalavi. It's Mahadrin Dairy, and it's a very good food.
It's important for us to emphasize that what we do here is we train people in every area of restaurant work. So it's not just, you know, cleaning tables, it's preparing the food, cooking the food, doing the waitressing, maintenance, every area of restaurant work.
And adjoining it is the gift shop, where some of the things that I saw being made are being sold. Having described to you now what I saw here at Shekel, I'm now sitting with the CEO of it all, Clara Feldman. Welcome to the program.
Thank you very much.
How long has Shekel been operating?
Almost 40 years.
Do you have other centers besides this one here in the Jerusalem area of Talpiot, which I believe is your national head office?
Yes, this is our national head office. We are running the services all over the country. A lot of our program is here in Jerusalem, in this building that you visit today.
How many disabled persons can Shekel accommodate altogether?
Altogether, it's around 8,000 people. We give them services in daily basis, and thousands of people that come from time to time to get services.
As a CEO, you must have some social services background. Can you tell me about that?
My first degree, BA, is in psychology and sociology, and my master is in economy. I work here almost 25 years, and in all those years, I learned a lot about how to give professional services, and I use my knowledge in economy and my knowledge in psychology, and I use my common sense to do my work.
Well, those degrees are a very good combination for this work. Do you accept all ages of people here?
Yes, we work with children and adults, and even not in the sense of elderly, but people with disability that they get to be elderly. So we work with all the ages.
I see you have both physically and mentally disabled people here. That requires a wide variety of occupational therapy and activity. So besides volunteers, you obviously need professionally trained personnel.
The reply after the break.
Hey everyone, this is Ari Fulda. I want to invite you all to join me on my weekly show, Bulletproof, here on Israel News Talk Radio. It's the weekly show we discover, expose, and destroy all anti-Israel propaganda that spread throughout the universe, both from outside Israel, including also inside Israel. Join me every week, and let's defend Israel together.
Bulletproof. Live every Sunday at 5 p.m. Israel time, 10 a.m. U.S. Eastern time.
And now, here is Walter Bingham.
So besides volunteers, you obviously need professionally trained personnel.
Yes, Shekel is a very professional organization. If you want to treat people well, you need to have professionals. So in Shekel are working almost 600 professional people from different kind of professions, like psychologists, social worker, therapists. And beside them, we have around 700 volunteers. So the combine between the professionals and the volunteers give us the chance to do good work.
Do you have limits to the type of disability you can accept?
Usually when somebody comes to our organization to get the services, we have a long evaluation with the family and the disabled people himself, and we try to build a good individual program for him. And if we see that we are not able to do it, so we say to the people that may be in other place, but most of the people we try to give the right service.
In your experience, how many people did you unfortunately have to reject?
Not much. Every week here, 20, 30, 40 new people are coming that want our services. Most of them in different kind of services, not different one from another. And we try to give them the answer that they need. If they need some treatment, if they need housing program, if they need workshops. So we try to give answers.
Before we come to the detailed work that you do here, this is a day center. Do you also have residential accommodation?
Yes, we have a spectrum services that include housing program, workshops, treatments in the afternoon programs in the schools. We have treatment centers and accessibility center.
Accessibility.
So we have a lot of programs that give answer for everybody.
Tell me something about the accommodation. Is it in hostels? Is it in institutions?
No, we have no institutions and no hostels. We don't believe in this kind of treatment. We believe that everybody has the right to live in the community and to live in the society beside the other people. So we have housing programs. People live in small groups, like 4-6 people that have some common things together. They live in the same apartment. This is their apartment, and we just give the service in the apartment.
This is an apartment in a housing block.
All the apartments in the housing block. They can be your neighbors, they can be my neighbors. They live all over the country in different kind of normal apartments.
What about the neighbors of those apartments? From my long experience, I find that if one even sits in a restaurant and on the next table someone is in a wheelchair, people feel uncomfortable.
I think that this is a big, big change in the last more than 10 years. Today, people are more open mind and they believe that people with disability should be beside them. I am not saying that from time to time we have no problems. We opening apartments all the time, and there are some neighbors that say we don't want these neighbors, but we convince them because it's a long process before the people are coming to live in those apartments. And we knew the neighbors, and we, after they move in the apartment, they invite them and they cook cookies, and they have a very nice open neighborhood life together, and it's work. So we go to visit.
Your disabled charges who live in an apartment, they must need some help. Is there supervision?
Of course. There are different kind of apartments. There are apartments that people that live there, they are very severely handicapped.
Severely.
So they need all day and all night professionals that work with them and also volunteers. There are people that can live in more easier and don't need so many help. So we have only in the afternoon professional peoples. So no one lives in our apartments without professional help.
So what do they do all day? Do they come here to your center or do they go to work?
We have a lot of centers and we try to find a workplace in the community, like everybody else in the business, in the society, in high tech, everywhere. So we are working very hard to find places to work. And if somebody is hard to him to work outside, is coming to our centers and they work here in different kind of interesting works. So they get also money and they are happy because they are 6, 7, 8 hours out. And after that, they come back to their apartments. Professional people are waiting for them. And in the afternoon, we have also a very large leisure time involved in the society, in the community. They are not apart.
You talk about money. Those who are working outside in normal workplaces and get wages, what happens to that money? Does that go to you?
No. They have their own bank account and the money is their money. We help to educate how to use money and what to do, not to spend it only for not good things, but the money is their money in their account.
Your charges have different abilities. Just give me a quick rundown of the variety of work that they do.
They can work in the factory. We have here a candle factory. We have electricity factory. They can work in the kindergarten.
What kind of kindergarten?
Usual kindergartens and also kindergartens for children with special needs. They can help there. They can work in centers for elderly people. They can play music instruments. They can work in high-tech companies. They can work in restaurants. As you visit our restaurant, don't they work there? They can work in stores. They can work in cleaning. They can work everything.
So besides all the work which you have described, you are also working for the wider community in a program of accessibility. How does that work?
Accessibility is a very important issue in Israel. We have a new law that was very hard to change things in Israel. There are a lot of people with disability and handicapped people, and they need to work and to be in every place because they have the right. Around 20 years ago, put a section here in Shekel that is working. His main work is to get accessibility and to do programs for accessibility all over the country. So if we are talking about local authorities, you are going in a city and you see that there are a lot of places that people with disability, they can go. So we did the city, we give a program that they can do accessibility all over the place. We did the Parliament of Israel Accessible. We finished it in the last few weeks. And our parliament is supposed to be the most accessible parliament in the world. The same very interesting program we are doing in the old city of Jerusalem. Usually very hard to negotiate. It's also political issues and other issues. And also to see such an old city and to give the chance for people with disability to work in, because it's very hard. I think that we are maybe the only old city in the world that we did it. And a lot of people with disability all over the world coming and say, it's amazing.
You also facilitated accessibility in the transport system.
Yes, we are advisor of the Minister of Transportation, and our professionals advise there what kind of buses, what kind of bus station will be in Israel, how it can be accessible for people with hearing problem and vision problem and cognitive problems. So if you go to the Jerusalem train...
That's the local light rail, the tram, as it might be called.
Yeah, you can see that it's very, very accessible. Also, if you are going to a bus station, you can hear that the bus say where I am going and how to get in.
Every bus has automatic announcement, which is the next station.
It's not only that. The people with the vision disabilities, they have in the phone the announcement when the bus is coming. So he know that this bus that is coming, now he can go up without, they have a special application.
I always say that Israel is the innovation nation of the world, and here is another one. Well, Shekel does a wonderful job. But is there a charge for the people to come here?
No, we don't charge money for the people that are coming here, but the people have a government stipend. And when they want to come to get services from Shekel, they are going to the social worker in the city that they live. And from the Ministry of Welfare and the city, they get the right, and they will pay us the charge.
That's obviously not enough to run this operation with professional staff. So are you funded in any other ways?
Of course. Without fundraising, we can keep going and develop new programs and also the programs that we have. Spill to the organization, to foundations, to private people, to good people. And we did an annual event to get some fundraising, and we have the volunteers.
So you depend on voluntary contributions from all kinds of sources and certainly from philanthropists.
I don't want to say that we totally depend on philanthropy foundations, but we can develop and do good programs to give what really the people need without fundraising.
I see you also running a restaurant at this location, at which I must say I've eaten a number of times and it's excellent. I suppose that helps.
we opened the restaurant because first we want to give to people with disability the chance to work in normal work, and that people from outside see them that they can do a very good job. But also we want the people with disabilities to have a good salary. And also we hope that somewhere we will have more money to develop other programs for this income.
I suppose you have a website with all the information. So if any of my listeners want to get in touch with you to either volunteer or contribute financially, where do they find you?
They can find us in our website. It's www.shekel.org.il.
Let me repeat that. www.shekel.gov.il. And everything is on that website.
Everything. They can donate, they can know about us, they can have some information. And I will be happy to help people and also to say thank you for people that they want to donate.
Clara Feldman, CEO of Shekel, thank you very much.
Thank you.
I cannot say it often enough that Israel is the paradigm of a caring and compassionate society. And what I saw at Shekel makes me proud to be an Israeli. This organization provides the opportunity for people of every type of disability to realize their potential in terms of independence, so that they have complete equality and inclusion in every facet of life. Shekel has been a trailblazer in creating viable alternatives to the limiting options of institutional or hostel life. I know that I've not even seen half of the activities that they have made available for the people who are entrusted to them and that take place outside of their premises. They even went up in a hot air balloon. Their 120 or so specially fitted apartments make it possible for the disabled to lead an independent life as full and contributing members of society. I really have to congratulate the CEO Clara Feldman and her staff on their achievement from humble beginnings in 1979. I give Shekel 10 out of 10 for their contribution in removing the stigma of disablement. Now to something else. Although Norway was one of the first countries to recognize Israel on the 4th of February 1949, relations have soured in recent years. For instance, in September 2010, after Germany began testing two new Dolphin-class submarines for the Israeli Navy, Norway banned them from testing in her territorial waters due to their possible future role in enforcing the blockade of the Gaza Strip. The country played a prominent part in the peace negotiations of 1993 with the PLO, the Palestinian Liberation Organization, known as the Oslo Accords, as well as Oslo II, signed in Taba, Egypt, in 1995. The Oslo Accords were bilateral agreements between Israel and the PLO. The signed agreement was entitled the Declaration of Principles on Interim Self-Government Arrangements. Its main concern was about Israeli withdrawal from the territories of Judea, Samaria, and the Gaza Strip, in order to allow the establishment of a Palestinian authority for self-government for an interim period until permanent arrangements would be established. For reasons beyond my comprehension, these signatures were deemed to justify the award of the Nobel Peace Prize to Israeli Prime Minister Yitzhak Rabin, Israeli Foreign Minister Shimon Peres, and PLO Chairman Yasser Arafat for their efforts to create peace in the Middle East by a declaration of principles. Note, for their efforts and a declaration of principles. And compare this with the Nobel Prize for Literature, which will never be awarded for creating the outline of a book, but rather for the completed work. It implied that following this agreement between Israel and the PLO, peace and tranquility will break out all over the Middle East. This illusion has been thoroughly exploded. Ever since then, the Norwegians felt themselves justified in mediating in the ongoing conflict between the Palestinian leadership and Israel,
Well, not so much mediating as representing the Palestinian Authority side. The periods of the Labour government under Prime Minister Jens Stoltenberg were particularly anti-Israel. Since 2013, the right-wing government led by Emma Solberg has somewhat softened its position vis-à-vis Israel, although there are strong proponents of a two-state solution and believe that the settlements are an obstacle to peace. Well, maybe they have forgotten that before 1967 there were no settlements in what they erroneously call the West Bank. The Norwegian government still gives financial support to the Palestinian leadership, although it has been established that much of the funds never reach their intended destination. There are also Norwegian NGOs among those whose sole purpose is to harm the State of Israel and its security. So, for instance, the Palestine Committee of Norway is among the organizations whose members or individuals are among the recently published list of those prevented entry into Israel. Minister of Strategic Affairs Gilad Erdan said, "No country would allow visitors to come to harm the country, enter it, and certainly when the goal is to destroy Israel as the Jewish state." This week, the first woman foreign minister of Norway, Ine Marie Eriksen Søreide of the Conservative Party, was on an official visit to Israel. She had consultations with Prime Minister Netanyahu and was also received by President Reuven Rivlin. In his welcoming address, the president thanked her for the Norwegian government's work to combat anti-Semitism, and he said, "In the last few years, there has been a significant improvement, a testament to the ability to overcome hatred and educate understanding. We still have a long and important way to go, and we must continue down this path in order to combat this terrible phenomenon." The president went on to express his thanks to the Norwegian government for their stand against boycotts and the BDS movement. He added, "I believe that BDS leads to increasing hatred and does not work against it. And it symbolizes all that stands in the way of dialogue, debate, and progress. It is against all cooperation and against our lives together here. You must work against it no less than we, because it stands in the way of progress." In relation to the Israel-Palestinian conflict, he said, "We must build our trust afresh. There are no shortcuts to building trust. We are here. We have returned to our homeland. This is a fact which cannot be denied. The reality is today that different peoples are living here in this land, and we must learn to live together."
The Jewish people have returned back to the homeland, and there is no other homeland but the land of Israel for the children of Israel, or the people of Israel. The efforts of Zionism to return back to our homeland began 120 years or before. We are doing a lot in order to fulfill this idea. We have to realize the reality, and we are doing our best in order to bring to an end the idea of pressing instead of negotiating. Thank you. Thank you for coming.
Thank you, Mr. President, and also thank you for receiving me on such a warm welcome as well. I think it is a very good start of what is my first visit to Israel in my capacity as a foreign minister. I've been here before, and I've started off the day with very good talks with the Prime Minister, and we'll continue with talks during the day and tomorrow. And then I will go on to the U.S. to have talks with counterparts in the U.S. and also accompanying my Prime Minister to meet with Trump, but also, of course, to have meetings with Tillerson, with Mattis, with McMaster and others, and also Congress. And, of course, I bring with me a lot of the impressions that I get here and the talks that we have. And, of course, I'm always interested in seeing your perspective on both the situation when it comes to the peace process, but also the regional situation. To me, it is very useful to get it directly from you. I'm going to talk to Palestinians tomorrow and get also their side of how they see things, both regionally, but also when it comes to the peace process. And that will also, of course, be important messages to bring on to the work that we will jointly do in the AHLC and also in other areas and forums where we can try to start again on some positive note and try to get again direct and bilateral talks. That I think is the only way we can secure a prosperous but also safe and secure future for the two peoples.
Yeah, you know that if Palestinians will feel that going to the United Nations or to every international organizations to get results or to get resolutions, and it is political resolutions, and by that can impress the other side, which means Israel, we will get to no place. And sometimes when the international organization, as a political organization, receiving any kind of resolution, it brings the Palestinian to the idea that they don't need to negotiate, that they can press us. And this is something that everyone learns. I'm not saying that because I'm trying to patronize them. I and my family are living with the Palestinians for the last 200 years. And we are all Jerusalemites. And they know that we have returned to our homeland because we felt all the time that this is our homeland. You know, Jews were praying for the last 2,000 years to God to return them back to Jerusalem.
At this point, the press withdrew to leave the president and foreign minister to their private consultations. I am extremely surprised that in his eagerness to indicate his long Jerusalem ancestries, the president implied that there were Arab Palestinians for the past 200 years, when the Arab population during that time considered itself to be Syrians, and the only Palestinians were Jews. Wherever one looks in Israel, there are official excavations by the Israel Antiquities Authority where the most amazing finds are discovered. Only last week, a stamped piece of clay from the first temple period, which belonged to the governor of the city of Jerusalem, the most prominent local position to be held in Jerusalem of 2,700 years ago, and which were excavated at the northwestern part of the Western Wall Plaza in Jerusalem's Old City. The extraordinary find is a lump of clay, stamped and pre-fired, measured 13 by 15 millimeters, and is some 2 to 3 millimeters thick. The upper part depicts two figures facing each other, and on the lower part is the inscription in ancient Hebrew script. The find's great importance is that until now we only know the expression of city governor of Jerusalem from the Bible. This is the first time we find it in the archaeological context, in a dig of a structure from the 7th century. Among the finds uncovered this week in an excavation in the Jaljilia area of the Sharon region, conducted by the Israel Antiquities Authority in a joint operation with Tel Aviv University, are hundreds of flint hand axes used by prehistoric humans some 500,000 years ago. According to Mayan Shema, the excavation director of the Israel Antiquities Authorities, and Professor Ran Barkai, head of the archaeology department at Tel Aviv University, the extraordinary quantity of flint tools, many in the shape of teardrops, uncovered in the excavation, provide significant information about the lifeways of prehistoric humans during the Lower Paleolithic period. It seems that 500,000 years ago, the conditions here in Jaljilia were such that this became a favored locality, subject to repeated human activity. We associate the industry found on this site to Homo erectus, a direct ancestor of the Homo sapiens, the human species living today. The past of all of us is buried in the earth, and we have a one-time opportunity to travel back 500,000 years and get to know the ancient humans who lived here before us, between Jaljilia and Road 6. The controversies surrounding President Trump are never out of the news. So today it's bye-bye Bannon, who, as President Trump said, not only lost his job, but also his mind. And now, to top it all, he also lost his power base at Breitbart News, which he helped to create. Good riddance. His fall from power is now complete. During the election campaign and sometime after, Steve Bannon was chief strategist for the Trump campaign and helped to bring President Trump to the White House. But his aim was to advance his own interests, and that was his downfall. You cannot have missed the news of the publication of Michael Wolff's new book, Fire and Fury, Inside the Trump White House, in which he describes the inside story of the most controversial presidency of our time.
In it are such items as what President Trump's staff really think of him, or why FBI Director James Comey was really fired, and why Trump's former chief strategist Steve Bannon and Trump's son-in-law Jared Kushner couldn't be in the same room together. The book also contains an account of an interview Bannon gave to the author in which he describes a June 2016 meeting between Donald Trump Jr., Jared Kushner, Trump's son-in-law, Paul Manafort, and Russians offering incriminating information about Hillary Clinton at Trump Tower as treasonous and unpatriotic. All of it is flatly denied by the White House and led to the forced departure of Bannon from Breitbart. Bannon has been heavily criticized for promoting the alternative right known as alt-right, who welcome into their ranks racists and white supremacists, and whose mouthpiece was Breitbart News. According to the news site Axios, a lawyer for President Trump says legal action against Steve Bannon is imminent, accusing the former White House aide of breaking confidentiality and a non-disparagement agreement he had signed with the Trump campaign. The story rolls on. Here is my thought for the week. Never give up. Great things take time. No doubt, when I hope to be back next week, there'll be more news from President Trump and the White House. In the meantime, this is Walter Bingham wishing you a very good week. And please don't forget to look in on your elderly neighbor. Sometimes they don't turn on the electricity to save money. Goodbye.
Hi, I'm Elizabeth. I'm from Stanton, California, and I love listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
Hi, I'm Andy from Augsburg, Germany, living now in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. When I want to get the news from Israel, I listen to Israel News Talk Radio.
Hi, I am Leo Yuwono from Indonesia, and I love listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
Hi, I'm Carlton Letala from Zimbabwe, and I always listen to Israel News Talk Radio.
My name is Akira.
And I'm Bela Singer from Efrat, Israel, and we love listening to Israel News Talk Radio for the best information on Israel and the Jewish nation.
Hello, this is Mudaz Iran, leader of the Jordanian Opposition Coalition from Jordan. As an Arab, I enjoy listening to Israel News Talk Radio for the most updated news about Israel and to follow peace with our friendly neighbors.
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio. News, opinion, and more. You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.